Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Horsemanship Remark Show. It is the Ocala, Florida edition. And my friend, the Clem Binninger, is here this morning. And we thought we would chat with you guys really quickly. Michael is heading here from vacation. Vacation, as they say it. And Debbie, good morning. And so Clem is being my co-host this morning.
Yeah, thank you, Emma, for having me.
Of course. What time did you guys get in last night? Tell the people.
Oh, we got in like, it was about 3:30 probably.
Was it that
local time? So it wasn't quite as late for us at home.
But. Oh my gosh. It's been a crazy travel situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, you weren't supposed to be that late, right?
No, it got a little delayed. It was pretty snowy in Salt Lake, so that's why I think we were probably a little hour or two later than we should have been. And then trying to get a rental car was kind of hard.
Did I tell you? I don't think I've had a chance to tell you yet. So Kip and I flew in to Orlando. Well, it was kind of crazy because we were originally supposed to be on one of those Alaska planes where the door blew off.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the night, that happened a few days before we were supposed to leave, and then the night before we were leaving, which was, so Monday night, we get a message saying, your flight's been canceled, we're sorry. And we're like, oh no. So we got the last two flights on a, we had the last two seats on a super early flight on American. Oh. And yeah, so that was really lucky. But then we got to Orlando Monday night and the weather, like there was a squall line. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And so we got to Orlando at 4:30 local time, but had to kind of try to get around the lightning for an hour and made it. But there was lightning for sure as we were landing.
It's kind of scary.
It was. And they couldn't pull the hell is the thing called where they go from the jetway? Is that what it's called? The thing that from the terminal to the plane.
Oh, the walkway deal.
Yeah, which is metal.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, we can't get you guys off the plane until the lightning stops. So we're waiting. And there's like 270 people on the plane. And then every phone went off with a tornado warning.
Oh.
Like, imminent tornado. Everyone take shelter.
Jeez.
We're like, well, we're kind of stuck. Yeah. So that was pretty funny. But we were glad to make it as well. So I'm going to switch over here so I can see you guys' comments this morning. And I'm going to swipe Kip off of here so that he is golfing this morning. And we have sunshine, which is amazing. Yeah. Because what's the temperature at home?
It's probably about 20 degrees and getting a lot colder each day, so and a bunch of snow on the ground.
Yeah, we're gonna have ice, I think, at home too.
Yeah.
Susan, good morning. Christina, good morning. Tornadoes are scary. Yeah. Joanne, hi. Good morning. It was scary, and it's just one of those things where you're thinking, well, what else is there to do?
Yeah.
You just have to. If that's your time, that's your time. So speaking of crazy events.
Yeah.
I asked Clem if he would tell the story about the fire, and he said he would. So will you please tell us about the fire, the barn fire?
So it was Christmas Eve, and my sister was home from Montana. She was staying with us for a week or so. We were all home, and it was like 11:30, and I heard, like, I couldn't tell what was going on. I heard my dad say something, my mom say something, and I got out of bed, and I just, like, I didn't know what was going on, because my whole room was just, like, it was just, like, daylight almost, and it was, like, glowing, and I was like, what? And then I heard something about the barn, and I was like, oh, boy, and I look out the window, and there's 20-foot flames coming out of our barn, so pretty crazy. I ran down there. There's nothing I could do. The tack room hadn't caught on fire yet, where all our saddles were, but I wasn't about to go in there. And so We just had to watch it. It was crazy. Yeah. It was just so hot. You come down there and barely even stand a long ways away from it. And
how far is that? Was the house or was the barn from the house?
It's like probably 150 yards. The house kind of overlooks the barn up on the hill. So quite a ways.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. Now, yeah. One thing I didn't, was that barn there when your parents bought the property?
No, my dad built it in 2013. So we built it in 2013. Everyone thinks it was an old barn, like, cause it's got, my dad did a really cool, like old style, Gothic roof, they call it, with, it's rounded instead of like traditional, like slope like that. So everyone thinks it's old, but my dad just built it kind of old style like that.
That's pretty dramatic. So how long did it take to start to finish, do you think?
I don't know. It probably started like half hour, 45 minutes before we saw it, or even longer. Because, you know, until it really got going, that's what my dad said, is he heard it, because it was just like whooshing and stuff. But I don't know. And then fire trucks came. They did all they could do. They couldn't save the tack. They couldn't save anything. So they just dumped all the water they had on it and tried to get it mostly out. And then it kind of restarted again, and it smoldered. It's probably still smoldering right now. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so by morning, was it gone?
No. In the morning, it had restarted again, and it was going pretty good. Because all that water kind of evaporated off, and then it died back down. We started digging around and cleaning it all up right the day after. So,
yeah, that's amazing. So you just got in there with the tractors?
Yeah, we had, so the day after Christmas, so we let it go all day Christmas, didn't touch it. And then day after Christmas, we had a bunch of people come help, which was really nice. And then we got it pretty much all cleaned up then. And then now it's just, there's some piles of stuff, like just everything metal. Still there, but we got it pretty much cleaned up with a bunch of help, so that was really nice.
That's so cool.
Yep. And everyone has been super nice on Instagram, Facebook, everywhere, been posting a bunch of stuff, and we've had so many people giving us tack, and it's been crazy. It's really helped, you know. It's really tough when that happens, but it's really helped to have all these people showing us that they care. Even people that never even met us before have been coming out and offering anything they can, which is really nice. And Emma has been helping, and everyone.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's always nice when the community, when you feel the community share your love,
yeah,
or share their love with you, right? Like when you get to receive it. I would also say, it's such a good feeling to be able to help,
yep,
too. So in a way, it's a, I don't know, it's a blessing sort of to, yeah, to everyone. Although I have to say from the outside, what I did not know that your dad had built the barn. I knew he built the house. They built the house, but the gear,
yeah,
was the part that I certainly was like, because I'm all attached
that,
to it.
I would say that was probably the biggest thing, too. We had all of our packing stuff and a ton of tools and tents. And it's not stuff you all go out and buy all at once. But, you know, it's just kind of an accumulation over a bunch of years. But there's nothing you can do about it. It's just stuff. It's not people. It's not animals. So.
Yeah, so someone was asking, Christina was asking, what was the barn used for? Anna.
Mostly, the biggest use we had for it was keeping our tack in there. And hay. We had probably 20 tons of hay in there, too. But we had plenty of hay. That wasn't too big a deal. And then, yeah, it was mostly hay and tack. We had stalls in there, but we hardly ever keep horses in there unless we got one that's hurt or needs medicine every day or something like that, so. It was kind of more designed. Now that we're building a new barn, we're gonna design it better for what we're doing. So we're not gonna put as many stalls because we hardly use those, and then make our tack room bigger and those kind of things.
That'll be cool. Do you know how it started?
I think it was, we had these little stall waters in there. And they have a little heating element underneath them that's not underwater, and it just keeps the whole thing warm. And we had them turned down. I would always go, we'd always go look at those things, and we'd have them turned down all the way, that element and that the insulation in there. I'd go sometimes and see it, and it would be like charred just barely. But there's nothing you can do because there's water there, so you just turn it down all the way. It has to stay thawed out. So I think that's what was it.
Uh-huh.
And it started kind of near the back where those waters were, but it could have been something else too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cause I was thinking the hay.
Yeah, that's what everyone thought, but it was all pretty good quality hay. And it seems like I've had wet bales like that where you watch them, they're steaming, but it seems like that process of when they catch on fire like that takes just forever for them to actually get caught on fire because they're all wet and they just slowly warm up over a long time, but you never really know.
Yeah, for sure. Christina said she nearly had her coop go up from a water heater. It melted the bucket. I don't use water heaters, so I didn't.
Yeah, you gotta have them, but they could.
Yeah, electrical fire, yeah. For sure. Interesting. Well, so, do you want to tell really quick about Landgrove Coffee, just in case people don't? Just tell the quick story about your parents. Yeah. How old are you now, Clem?
I'm 15, gonna be 16 here in like a week.
Uh-huh, and we met when you were?
Five, I think, a long time ago.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Makes me so happy. Okay, so tell the, you can do a better job. What is the history of, what is the origin story?
So my dad, before he met my mom, he was kind of working in drive-thrus, and he started a little drive-thru chain, just selling retail coffee, and he'd buy his own coffee from different roasters. And then he decided he wanted to get kind of more into the behind the scenes of it, and he started roasting coffee, just started out really small in a garage, and then they worked up and got bigger roasters and built a shop on our property, and now that's what my parents do to support our horses, so pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love the story how your mom met your dad.
Yep.
Because she was transporting an eagle?
She worked in Boise. They were doing work with peregrine falcons. And so she had to get up really early to go put birds on airplanes. So she would always go to my dad's drive-thru, and that's how they met.
Yes, I love it. And so, it's called Landgrove Coffee.
Yep.
And you can go to landgrovecoffee.com. Some of the girls are saying here that you guys shipped out the coffee, and they just got it, and it's amazing. So, yeah, it is made with love and care and very well tested. So this morning, because we're all staying together in a big house, and your dad, he brings out the coffee, right? Because I didn't have any with me. So I'm like, and he goes, I brought some. So then I went to set the coffee maker up, and I'm like all nervous, you know, and John's like, that's too much water. He pours a lot of water. So we got a tutorial on the coffee.
You gotta have the right coffee.
So then we met at the
Spanaway Clinic, right?
Yes.
Or,
yeah, I Spanaway. Think.
Mm-hmm. In like 2014.
Something like, yeah. Uh-huh. And you were not riding.
Nope. I guess I was seven or six or I don't know.
Well, it was the year before you started riding Chief.
Yeah.
And Chief is a little black and white. Where'd you get him?
We got him in Montana. I think like my dad found him on like Craigslist or something like that. Maybe like Ranch World, something like that. I don't remember. It was a while ago.
Yeah, and how tall was he?
He's like 13'2", maybe.
13. No way. No, he's not. Really?
Or maybe 12. Yeah, no, he's probably shorter than that. I don't know. He's like 12 hands. He's shorter.
A little bugger. Yeah, and when these guys grew out of him, then you sold him to Michael.
Yep.
Sparling, who is also staying with us. and is the co-host of the show usually. Yeah. So yeah, they're sending hearts from Chief.
Oh, yeah.
Julia is, because she's, of course, there. What a gem of a horse. I remember your sister giving you some help after class.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The interesting thing, I will say, side note. So the interesting thing about meeting you guys at such a young age is, you know, a lot of kids are exposed to horses, especially if they have horse-crazy parents. Then they're exposed to horses, but it doesn't always catch. And honestly, the phrase is, the common wisdom is that it skips a generation.
Oh, yeah.
So, was it always for you, like, that it had taken a hold? And then it's rare that it's both of you guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was kind of just our lifestyle. We live kind of out of town. It was just something we always would go do and always had fun with. And then following Buck around really motivates you, going to all the clinics and seeing a bunch of other people. And I think if we would have maybe had a different lifestyle and didn't have Buck and people like you wanting us to keep going, I think it would have. There's a chance that I wouldn't be doing it right now, I definitely think, if it wouldn't have been for the people and environment I was in.
That's cool. Yeah, it's so impossible now to imagine what it would be like. But it's funny, as the adult, one of the adults, because we don't want to get too attached to whether or not you were gonna catch, you know, because we don't want to put that on. What if you wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer? Yeah. I don't know, real estate person. You know, who knows? So it's kind of interesting to sort of stay detached, which we still are, because you're only 16 and who knows. But it's been such a joy, of course, to see it, because what's interesting about watching you guys grow up and learn it like this is it's like getting a chance to see like a reflection, kind of, sort of, you know. I'm sure from your perspective, watching someone like me evolve as well,
mm-hmm,
over time, I guess it's probably just part of your culture is to support everyone and watch them grow.
Yeah. Yeah, watching other people going through the same things you are is helpful.
What was the hardest time in horses, do you think, so far?
Oh, shoot. I don't know. I would say, I mean, sometimes it seems like you'll hit a hard spot and you'll get discouraged, but I don't feel like there's ever a time where I really thought, like, really ever considered, like, not doing it anymore. You know, you have a little bit of ups and downs, but just kind of daily stuff like that. I don't know if I can say this, but I don't think I've ever really had a time where I was just, like, not wanting to do it at all, thinking I wanted to quit.
I could say the same.
Yeah.
I think I could say the same.
I mean, we all have days where you're like, God, why am I doing this? But but then you have days where you're like, this is the best thing ever also.
Yeah. And I think, too, it's interesting, the plateaus that you go through. And sometimes you're just on, like, a plateau and you're like, oh, just wait here. And you've probably gone through it so much, like, growing up, you know, but coming in as, and I started when I was really young too, but so just for anyone who hasn't gone through it a lot, a plateau is normal. Like, don't be alarmed.
Yeah.
If it feels like, I don't know, I'm the same as I was like 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the same as I was a year ago sometimes. And then you'll look back and you'll remember what you were dealing with a while ago, and that helps you.
Yeah, for sure. You want to tell us about your current horse, just so people have a...
Yeah, I've got one main horse I've been riding for, since 2020, so 4 years almost now. And I've been riding him in a hackamore. I don't know if I should be, but I am. It's pretty fun. And then I've got two a three-year-old, well, coming three-year-old, a four-year-old, and another four-year-old. So I've got quite a few young ones. I'm hoping to sell maybe two of those guys, keep one of them. And
are they mares?
I have two mares and two geldings. So my old horse is a gelding, and then one of my my four-year-old's a gelding, and then two other mares.
So you'd sell the mare and a gelding?
I'd probably sell the two mares.
Oh, okay.
I really like my gelding. My young gelding and my old gelding.
So he has this little filly named Aspen.
Yep.
And he could also give her to me, which would be fine. But I would suggest getting in line for her. Has she come along?
Yeah, I she would have if we wouldn't have had so much going on. And I've had quite a few to ride also. I've been riding her quite a bit. She has been coming along, but I wanted to do more than I did with her.
Well, you have time.
Hopefully, when I get back here, hopefully can do a little more riding before we get too busy in the spring also. Get her going a little better, maybe sell her at the end of this summer or something like that, whenever I feel like she's going pretty good.
Yeah, get in line, because she's so cute, too.
Yeah, she's pretty.
Super cute. And not huge, right?
No, she's little. I wish she was a little bigger, honestly.
But I don't know. So here we are in Ocala, right, in the land of warm bloods. And it used to be when I grew up, all anyone wanted was a warm blood. Well, in my land, yeah. You know? And now I look at them, I'm like, they're so big. I have two, right? But like, they're even huger here. And it's so fun to have a lift. Just, I mean, unless you're super tall or big or something, the practicality.
Yeah, the little ones are fun. When I was over in Montana at the OW, and Gabe Murata had me ride one of their little ponies around. He's a teeny little guy. It was fun riding.
Well, yeah, so you had Annie and Ocean.
Oh, yeah. Yep, those two.
That little, I have another one. Did I tell you that?
No.
She's bigger. She's like 13 hands, but I just bought her in summer, but she's in Ochoco.
Oh,
mm-hmm. She's very, very cute.
Yeah, those are, I really like my little horse. She's fun.
Well, she had the best little personality, right?
Yeah, she was so tough, too. I'd go ride her, chase cattle all day on her. She wouldn't even get tired.
Really?
Yeah. It seemed like they're tougher than big horses a lot of times.
Yeah, it's really interesting that the Yakima, these are the Yakima Reservation Mustangs, essentially, right? From middle Washington kind of area. And yeah, they are tough. I have four of them in the barn right at my house right now. And yeah, they just, like, for instance, I rubbed a sore spot. I have no idea why, because I use that cinch all the time on the buckskin that I have. Nothing.
Yeah.
Like you just see that. Whereas a thoroughbred, you're like, I can't go anywhere. Yeah. So, we are gonna have to get over to the horse park at some point. But I was really hoping that I am having coffee issues this morning. That we could talk about mules, because you are one of my only friends that has mules. So you want to talk about how those have fit into your life a little bit?
Yeah, so we do a lot of packing for, we work for outfitters in the fall and do a lot just for our personal recreation, go hunting and stuff like that. So we use, everyone likes mules for packing. They do really good, you know, back in a string by themselves. They can just sort things out in places where a horse would kind of get troubled and panic. Sometimes mules will take care of themselves a little bit better. So we have quite a few mules right now, probably, I think, five. And then we don't usually ride them a whole lot, but a couple years ago, my dad and I started two in a bucks clinic in Dayton. That was pretty fun. We've always worked with mules and stuff, but my dad's always had his old ones for a while, and so they're pretty gentle. You don't work with them too much, but it was fun to start those two and actually ride them. And then I went home and rode mine for a while, and we've been packing her past 3 years, and she's doing great. So is the other one my dad started. It's pretty cool to do. So.
That's so fun. I've never ridden one.
Really?
Not ever. So you guys know I have one, and I'm excited to get started with her. So when you say they take care of themselves, okay, so this is what it makes me think of. Dogs are dogs, right? Mm-hmm. And then a border collie.
Yeah.
You can tell that they plan, like they look out at their environment and they plan things differently. Yeah. Is it similar?
Yeah, I would say so. They just, it seems like they just protect themselves and keep themselves safe. And like horses, they'll do dumb things sometimes. They'll step in, you know, especially out in situations like that where you got a little teeny trail and it drops off into a river for 500 feet. You know, they have to be. They have to be all there. And sometimes a horse will get scared, step off. And it seems like mules are usually a little bit better about just, I got to get through this. And no matter what happens, I'm just going to stay on my 4 feet. So,
can they really jump straight up?
Yeah, they seem like they'll sometimes jump out of a stop, like out of a standstill, like going over something. Like they'll do that a little more than horses. Like a horse, sometimes they'll have to, if it gets over a certain height, you gotta run at it. But mules will kind of bounce over stuff, like a deer a little bit.
That's so great. I've heard at mule competitions, they have the flat-footed jump or something.
Yeah, they lead them up to a jump or something.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
Can't get a run at it, they just gotta jump over it. Yeah.
The funniest thing about the one that I have, you know, of course, ears.
Yeah.
And they're so expressive with their ears. What, since I had never really been around any consistently, mm-hmm. I'm like, they're pretty obvious about what they're thinking.
Yeah, but I noticed that too, though. They're always doing stuff with their ears. And, oh, it's funny when I ride that mule for a while, and then you get on a horse and you're like, but where do the ears go?
And you just think, well, if you can't read a mule,
yeah,
you should probably just go home.
And mules, they're not, horses will sometimes hide stuff from you and want to make you feel better, it seems like. But mules are like, I don't care. I don't want to do that, or you're not giving me a good deal or something like that.
Yeah. Have you experienced the mule that kind of has made their mind up in terms of a person, like a sour, I don't know how to say it, like a sour one or a ruined one? Or
I don't think so. I think the whole stubbornness thing, like everyone says mules are stubborn, but I think it's more they're smarter than horses. Because, like, I mean, not necessarily smarter than horses, but it seems like they're just like, I'm not gonna go down through that bog or whatever or something like that. I'm not dumb, you know. But I don't, like, towards a certain person, I don't think they're not predators. Like,
sure,
they're just like horses, really. But yeah, I think that a lot of that's kind of a myth.
Okay. Yeah, it's fascinating. The whole thing is so interesting. They definitely have something different. That's what I was
thinking. Yeah. Oh, definitely. Like, you'll notice that. And a lot of, some things take a lot longer to get them good at, and then some things it seems like are quicker. And then it's fun. It was fun when I was starting her, just to notice. Go back and forth from horses and just kind of feel the difference.
The one that I was telling you about, and actually working with Feather in general, and her too, was like when I would ask her to do something, or you'd see her making, you know, getting ready to make a decision. And let's say it would take a horse, you know, I would have an idea, and then it takes like, you know, for the horse to do it. And then the mule just takes like a couple extra, and then
And then it seems like for you to get them to do something for you, it takes a lot of convincing a lot of the time. Because they have to be, it seemed like when I was working with mules, if they want to do something, they have to be totally sure that it's going to work out for them. But then horses are like, it seems like they kind of want to please you a little bit more. And a mule, they're more focused about themselves.
Interesting. Very interesting.
It's just kind of what I've felt. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's partially the humans, interpretation of it a little bit too, but
yeah, you never really know what they're actually thinking.
Well, that's, but like, when I brought Feather home, she had, so her stall, she never lived in a stall before, but she has a stall with her, an in and out. So she has a paddock, like, you know, 30 by 50 paddock, and it has a fir tree in it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. I could just, right away, what crossed my mind is, oh, she likes her tree.
Yeah.
I don't know why I would think that. Like, that's not something that, I've been around horses forever. I'm like, oh, you know, unless they do something like super obvious, like clearly she likes to be here, she likes to be there. This was right away. And I was like, oh, she likes that tree.
Yeah, they're funny. It's funny to watch them. Like, when you kick them loose, just what they do. Like, we'll be up in the mountains, I'll have all our horses tied up, and there'll just be mules going around. They're funny. They're different. They'll go over all by themselves, walk over and get water, and just, they're just funny.
Do you not have to tie them up?
Oh, we do usually. Sometimes we'll just kick a couple loose, just save a little bit of feed, because usually we're packing feed. So.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes we'll just, if we got a bunch tied up, we'll just kick one or two mules loose, and then they won't go anywhere. They won't really leave their horses. But, well, actually, 2 years ago, we were up at an elk camp, and we had a bunch of stock in camp, and we went out hunting for the day. My mom was in camp, and my dad's like, "Yeah, you can kick our old mule Kelly, you can kick her loose," and she was, let her eat around. And my mom kicked her loose, and about 5 hours later, she was back at our lodge, 15 miles away.
Oh my God!
All by herself.
No way! Yeah,
and some hunters said they saw her, and she's just trotting down there, getting down to the green grass and a water trough and a corral instead of a muddy highline and alfalfa cubes. That was funny. My dad said he never heard of one doing that. It was all by herself for, like, 15 miles.
That's a wave.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. She's like, I have a better plan.
Yeah.
Sometimes I could tell with Feather a little bit. She's like, why would I go out into that muddiness?
Yeah. That's dumb.
Like, that seems like a bad idea. What's your favorite thing about packing?
I think just being out there, and just, it's really cool just to see how effective you can be with animals, just getting gear into a place you would never think you could. You can get have a full camp and a stove and full cook gear and all the food you need, and just with just something you could have done 100 years ago. It's pretty cool. And just being out there with all that, it's pretty cool. And, you know, just those skills to do that, it seems like you feel pretty special when you're up there doing something that's been a tradition up, especially where we are. You know, there's stories of packers going up there a long time ago and doing exactly what we're doing now, and in the same exact country, hasn't been touched. No trucks been up there ever.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Very cool. And do you work for the Forest Service at
times? No, my dad used to a little bit, but now we're working for a private outfitter mostly, and they just guiding and packing hunters up there for them. But, you know, we would work for the Forest Service a little bit, clearing trails, and my dad used to spray weeds in the backcountry, the invasive weeds like that. We whatever work my dad, for a while, he was really into trying to make money doing it, and he would work for the Forest Service a lot, whatever he could find, stuff like that.
Before the coffee.
Yep.
So Joanne was asking, she was just curious what kind of wildlife you've seen up there.
Oh, everything. That's another cool thing about it. Well, so we're usually hunting, most of our camps are hunting elk, but You're seeing elk tracks, you're seeing wolf tracks, and flushing grouse up, and mule deer, and whitetail, and all the time. And then bears, we see a lot of bears in that country.
Are they just black bears?
Yeah, just black bears. But sometimes they'll give you a little trouble because they don't really like the smell of them, the horses and mules.
What do you mean trouble?
Just like when you're packing, you mules and everything, they'll get a little bit scared.
Oh, okay.
We had one a couple of years ago, and I was in the lead. I had maybe 2-3 mules. My dad had probably a couple, 2 behind me. Then we're going through the spot, my horse is really snorting. I'm like, oh, he smells something. And then I was like, geez, what is he doing? He's like, he's going faster and about to lose the mule behind me. And I look and there's 3 bears in a tree, like 10 feet off the trail. It was a mall and 2 cubs. I don't think they ever actually saw them, which I think saved us, but they're just, I see him run up this tree right there. And then my dad, the best part is my dad rides right through there. And I just got out of there as fast as I could. And then I come around the corner and I'm like, did you see those bears? He didn't even see them. He just rode right by them. I was like, there's 3 bears right there. Right
look up
the trail.
The mountain lions are what scare me the most.
Then. Yeah, there's not a whole lot up where we are. I think they keep a lower population density than bears or anything else like that. But there are a few. My dad's seen some up there, but I don't think I've never seen one.
What about wolves?
Wolves, yeah, there's not a whole lot, but we run into them on the trail. Doesn't seem like the horses care too much about them, but yeah. We'll run into some wolves, always seeing wolf tracks. If there's elk, there's wolves. So
yeah, I suppose that makes sense.
Everyone, whenever you're hunting, everyone sees wolf tracks and they're like, oh, there's not gonna be any elk in here. No, that means there's elk in here. That's what the wolves need. So.
Like in the ocean when you see the dolphins and yep. You're like, yay, let's swim with the dolphins. And you're like, uh-huh. But when there's dolphins, there's sharks.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Cleaning up.
They need each other.
That's right. What is your favorite way to cook elk?
I would say eating tenderloins and backstrap, just steaks, is really good.
You fry it up or?
Yeah, just fry it up in some garlic or something. It's pretty fun when we're out there just killing elk or something. Go out and cook it on the campfire, cook up your tenderloins like right after that. That's always fun.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Did you guys have to not have fires that year that it was so, so dry?
No. It's in Idaho's usually pretty good. We can pretty much do what we want usually, and we're up so high that it's a lot. It's usually quite a bit cooler, and it's September usually when we're hunting, September, October, like that. So I don't think they really do that in our country. Those fire bans like that. They will maybe down where there's more people, but in campgrounds and stuff like that. But up where we are.
You're far, far away.
Yeah. No, I don't think I've hardly ever seen anyone else up there. So.
Well, up there. So you've never had to do any rescue missions or major first aid out there or anything? Not yet, right?
Not yet, yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, so those were the things that I kind of had on my mind, and I know we are supposed to go help. Does any of you guys... does my English... Clem, oh my gosh. Just wondering, where are you both from originally? She's from River Falls, Wisconsin. Christina, I am going to River Falls next month. So I am originally from, let's see, Vancouver, British Columbia, and then Portland, Oregon for a lot of years. And now I live just a little bit south of Portland towards the beach. So Oregon.
Oh, I am from Troy, Idaho. I've been my whole life. Right outside of Moscow, Idaho. That's a bigger town around there. Lewiston, Idaho, right around in there. So.
Yeah.
Live like right out of town there, so that's...
And, you know, we're not that far from each other.
No.
So I'm thinking I'm going to come see you guys.
Yeah, you should.
Start bringing horses. I don't even want to tell you guys that Clem is open for starting horses. Because I want to get... I always want to be like, oh, can I, you know, somebody that I want to get on your line, yeah. But you are going to be available to start some horses.
Yeah, I think so. I maybe take it. It's hard because we're, we run the neighbors into an arena. It's kind of hard with stuff like that. And then we're going to be busy building a new barn also this summer. If I wouldn't have that, I'd be a lot, I'd be more active trying to get ads out and stuff like that.
I don't think you need ads, buddy. I don't think, you know, there's not that many cold starters. So, so what about your new barn? Probably we'll wrap it up with plans for the new barn with horses in mind. You know, Gary Bailey is always talking. I've been to his place, of course, and he has such a horseman-like facility.
Yeah.
Right? Like the Highland, the arena, the pastures, all the horseback gates, the tack area, like the way that he set it up, because by the time they got that place, he had so much experience and pretty a lot similar to like kind of how you're growing up ish. Mm-hmm. So with all your experience in mind, what's the general plan?
Yeah, so our old barn my dad built in quite a while ago, over 10 years ago now. So it was more designed like we had some stalls, we had a tack room, and then a lot of like small bale hay storage up in the top. That's what that whole loft was. We could get probably 20 tons of hay up in there of small bales, but you can't get big bales up there. Like we had round bales up there, but it's not designed for that. It's for like little bales. You got to stack all by hand. But, so that didn't work for us because we have so many horses. You can't feed those little bales. You'd be going through a bunch of every single day. But so we're not gonna have like the huge hay loft anymore. And then for horses, my dad's gonna make the alleyway a lot wider. So because we had like a maybe 7-8 foot, I think it was 7 foot alleyway that you could tie horses up in there, but it was tight. You trying to shoe them or something like that, working around them. So he's gonna make the alleyway like 15 feet wide, so that'll be nice. And then I think of the whole, instead of just like one end and a side being the tack room, he's gonna make the whole wall, one of the whole sides a tack room.
Yeah.
And then it's gonna be more enclosed. Like we had a lot of outside kind of lean-to deals where we'd keep hay in the old one, and it's gonna be, we're not gonna really have any hay storage, just a little bit in the loft, because just for the few small bales we'll have if we have horses inside or something. But yeah, and then this is gonna be designed better for what we do, which is one good thing you can see out of the deal. So
yeah, well, there's probably a lot, but it's hard. You know, at the beginning, that is totally, if I were to rebuild my barn too, the aisleway.
Wider.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's just useful space.
For sure. And then, you know, bringing horses back and forth or tying. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. All right. Well, what else? So we're here at the Buck Brannaman Clinic, and Clem is Nathan's right-hand man for the weekend. And so if you are anywhere near Ocala, Florida, I really suggest you come out if you can. We're at the Florida Horse Park, and I was over there yesterday doing the sound check with NG. And the footing is great. The facility looks fantastic. I think there's plenty of seating for everybody. I think everyone's gonna be able to hear. Sounded great to me yesterday. Lots of parking. I think all the horses are gonna really enjoy it. It has been 15 years, I think, since Buck was here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think. And so it's kind of a big deal that he's in the area.
Yeah.
And we are excited to not be in our minus whatever at home.
Perfect time.
is there anything that you're really looking forward to seeing horsemanship?
Oh, I think it's going to be cool just to see down here how much different it is with the whole, it's an entire different world in this country, the whole horsemanship. So I think it's just going to be cool to see all the people and see how they react to Buck. And I'm sure a lot of them have been doing it a lot too. So I think it's just going to be fun to watch. Just wait and see what happens.
Tomorrow is Friday. Yeah. Friday is always a little wild. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for being here with us this morning. Thank you, Clem.
Thank you, Emma.
I appreciate it after so little sleep. And we will see you guys this weekend. If you make it out, please come say hello. And otherwise, Michael Sparling and I will be here next Thursday morning. not here. He'll be at home in Wisconsin and I'll be in Oregon, but we will be on the Horsemanship Remark show next Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8:30 Central. Bye, everybody.
Hi, everyone.
Let's say goodbye. Oh.